This video presentation reviews the historical events of the life of Imam Qadhim. This critical period of history coincides with the peak in power of the Abbasid Caliphate. This presentation also reviews the excessive pressure and oppression on the Imam by the Abbasid government. Imam Musa ibn Ja'far, also known as Qadhim, was born on the 7th of Safar, in the year 128 Hijri. He was born at Al-Abwa, a place between Mecca and Medina, where the tomb of Amina, the Prophet's mother, is located. He was born when his parents were returning from Hajj. He was the third son of Imam Sadiq, after his brothers Ismail and Abdullah. Imam Sadiq was very grateful for the birth of his son Musa, and celebrated by throwing a feast for 3 consecutive days upon returning to Medina. His mother was Hamida, originating from northern or northwestern Africa. She was captured as a slave and brought to Medina, where she married Imam Sadiq. Imam Sadiq had high regards for her and had said that Hamida is purified from any impurity and was being protected by angels until I married her. She was very pious and knowledgeable, and Imam Sadiq referred the women of the community to her to ask their questions regarding Islamic law. Imam Qadhim was about 4 years old when the Umayyad Caliphate was overthrown by the Abbasid Caliphate. The Umayyads, under the leadership of Abu Sufyan, were the main enemy of the Prophet Muhammad during his prophethood. They fought multiple wars against the Prophet and did not convert to Islam until the Muslims conquered Mecca. They then converted to Islam out of fear for their lives. However, the light of guidance never touched their hearts. Surprisingly, these hateful enemies of the Prophet had a chance to control the rulership of the followers of the Prophet at the time of Muawiyah, who turned the Islamic Caliphate into the Umayyads monarchy. The Umayyads ruled over the Islamic world for about 90 years until their extinction by the Abbasids. During this long period, the Umayyad Caliphs openly degraded Islam. They were not afraid to openly insult the Prophet, the Quran, or Islam, and would publicly indulge in sinful behavior. Contrary to the Umayyads, the Abbasids, who were the descendants of Abbas, the Prophet's uncle, were proud of being from the Prophet's tribe of Banu Hashim. They used their relationship with the Prophet to legitimize their government. They would respect the Prophet in their speech and had an Islamic outlook for their government. However, the Abbasids' crimes and murders against the people, as well as the Prophet's lineage, outnumbered the Umayyads' crimes. The number of people they killed to stabilize their government was far more than the people who were killed by the Umayyads. The Shia Imams at the time of the Abbasids had more difficulties and challenges to falsify their legitimacy for the caliphate and reveal their true intentions for the Muslims. There are limited historical records about the life of Imam Qadhim during his childhood. Despite that, the available records show the Imam's divine status and knowledge. Imam Qadhim was the third oldest son of Imam Sadiq after his brothers Ismail and Abdullah. However, Imam Sadiq had a special love for Imam Qadhim. When someone asked Imam Sadiq how much he loved Imam Qadhim, Imam Sadiq responded that, "I love him to an extent that I wish I did not have any other children, so I could have my entire fatherly love for my son Musa." The divine knowledge that was an intrinsic characteristic of the Shia Imams was manifested in Imam Qadhim from his childhood. In one incident, Abu Hanifa, the founder of the Hanafi school of thought, visited Medina and came to Imam Sadiq's house to ask him a question. When he was waiting for permission to see Imam Sadiq, he saw Imam Qadhim, who was just a few years old. He wanted to make fun of Imam Qadhim and asked him, "Where can a visitor go to the bathroom in your city?" The Imam precisely responded to him, according to the Islamic laws, by counting him the places that is prohibited as a bathroom. The Imam then said that you can use any other place as a bathroom. Abu Hanifa, who was shocked by the Imam's response, asked him the question that he had prepared to ask Imam Sadiq: "Does sin originate from God or from his servant?" Imam Qadhim responded with a logical and persuasive answer that Abu Hanifa returned from Imam Sadiq's house and said that this answer is enough for him. Mansur was the second caliph of the Abbasids after his brother Safa. During Safa's short government of less than 5 years, the main goal of the newly established Abbasids government was to remove the remaining Umayyads and suppress their potential uprising. After succeeding in this goal, the next Abbasid caliph, Mansur, implemented a tyrannical and oppressive regime to remove all other potential threats to the Abbasid government. He killed Abu Muslim and came into various battles with his opponents in Iran, Syria, Hejaz, and Iraq, including the uprisals of Muhammad al-Nafs al-Zakiyya and his brother Ibrahim. He finally made himself the sole powerful ruler in the Islamic territory by murdering thousands of people. He also constructed the city of Baghdad as a capital for his government to show off his power. Mansur was heartless, bloodthirsty, and very stingy. Mansur's policy was to put excessive economical pressure on the people to keep them hungry and thus make them obedient to himself. Furthermore, the hungry people would only struggle about feeding their own stomachs and would not have the opportunity for any political activities. Ismail was the oldest son of Imam Sadiq and was very pious and respected by the Imam. Many thought that Ismail would be the next Imam after Imam Sadiq, as Imamat had passed down to the oldest son in the past from Imam Sajjad to Imam Bakr and from Imam Bakr to Imam Sadiq. During the time when the Imam's activities were under intense surveillance by Mansur's spies and his own life was in danger, the Imam couldn't publicly introduce the next Imam. Any public announcement of this news would put the life of his successor in danger. The Imam had introduced his younger son Imam Musa al-Kadhim as his successor in the Imamat only to his very close companions. Ismail passed away during the life of Imam Sadiq, about 6 years before the Imam's martyrdom. The Imam, who knew that some might be misled about Ismail's death in the future, showed the body of Ismail to as many as 30 of his companions and asked them to testify in his death. Also, when the Imam and the other Muslims were sorrowfully taking Ismail's body for burial in the Baqi cemetery, the Imam would order to stop the procession and would uncover Ismail's face for the crowd to observe his corpse. The Imam repeated this action multiple times during the funeral. However, after Imam Sadiq's martyrdom, some rejected Ismail's demise and assumed him to be the promised Mahdi that had disappeared from their eyes. Some others accepted Ismail's demise, but believed in the continuation of Imamat from his lineage. Thus, they do not follow Imam Kadhim as the seventh Imam. These people are known as the Ismailis, which is one of the surviving factions of Shiaism until today. The Ismailis initially had a small group of followers, and thus began to propagate their faith. However, around 2 centuries later, they gained power by establishing Fatimid's government in Egypt and North Africa. Upon gaining power, they extensively propagated their beliefs all around the Islamic territory and increased their followers. Mansur, who had plotted to murder Imam Sadiq on several occasions, finally ordered Muhammad ibn Sulayman, his governor in Medina, to poison the Imam. Imam Sadiq's martyrdom brought grief to the entire city of Medina, and the people came in crowds to his funeral. Imam Kadhim took care of his father's funeral and buried him in the Baqi cemetery by his father Imam Bakr, his grandfather Imam Sajjad, and his great uncle Imam Hassan. When Mansur received news of the martyrdom of Imam Sadiq from his governor, Muhammad ibn Sulayman, he expressed sorrow and admitted that no one would ever replace him. However, Mansur wanted to terminate the chain of the Imamate after Imam Sadiq. He sent a message to his governor to inquire about whom Imam Sadiq had selected as a successor in his will. Mansur had ordered his governor to catch the Imam's successor and behead him. Imam Sadiq, who had predicted such a situation, had named 5 people as his successor in his will: the Caliph Mansur, the governor of Medina Muhammad ibn Sulayman, 2 of his sons Abdullah and Imam Kadhim, and Imam Sadiq's wife and mother of Imam Kadhim, Hamida. When Mansur heard about the Imam's will, he cancelled his initial order. Imam Sadiq, with this clever trick, not only saved his true successor, Imam Kadhim, but also made it clear for his prominent followers to recognize him. This is because his followers knew that the Abbasids, caliph, and governors were oppressors and were disqualified for imamate. Also, a female could not become an imam. His oldest son, Abdullah, could not be qualified either, since he had a physical disability in his leg and had limited religious knowledge. He could not respond to the questions raised by the people and Imam Sadiq's companions. Abdullah passed away shortly within 70 days from Imam Sadiq's martyrdom. Thus, all indications for imamate were towards the qualifications of Imam Kadhim. There was an unprecedented suppressive regime dominated in the society at the time of Imam Sadiq's martyrdom. Mansur's agents and spies were looking to identify and kill the Shia followers of Imam Sadiq. The Shias could not even hold a small gathering to discuss the next imam. Imam Kadhim could not directly call the people to his imamat, as this could lead to his martyrdom. The claim of imamat by the imam's older brother Abdullah was also another reason for the people's confusion in finding the true imam of the time. Mansur had provided freedom for Abdullah to claim his imamat, as this had caused division among the Shia community and would benefit his government. Although Imam Sadiq in his will had indirectly specified Imam Kadhim as the next imam, there was still confusion among the Shias about the next imam. This was to an extent that even some of Imam Sadiq's loyal companions did not know the imam of their time. On an occasion after the martyrdom of Imam Sadiq, two of his loyal companions, Hisham ibn Salim and Mu'min at-Tahh, were looking to find their next imam. They initially referred to Imam Sadiq's oldest son, Abdullah, and tested him with a question. Abdullah's response was quite different from the teachings of Imam Sadiq. They left Abdullah as they were really confused about whom to follow and which theological belief they should choose. Suddenly, an old man hinted at them to follow him. They became scared and thought he might be one of Mansur's spies whose intention was to kill them. Thus, to take precaution, only Hisham ibn Salim followed the old man. The old man was Imam Kadhim's envoy and brought Hisham to Imam Kadhim. The Imam greeted Hisham and began his conversation by addressing Hisham's concern without him telling the Imam anything which showed the Imam's knowledge of the unseen. The Imam told him not to follow any theological belief, but refer to me. Hisham then asked the Imam some questions and found the Imam's response in accordance with the teachings of Imam Sadiq. Hisham, who witnessed the Imam as the ocean of knowledge, testified to his imamat. He then asked the Imam for permission to guide the Shias to him. The Imam only permitted him to guide the mature and trustworthy Shias to him, with the condition to promise to keep his imamat hidden. The Imam, while referring to his neck, told Hisham that if his imamat is revealed, it will lead to his beheading. Although the notable companions of Imam Sadiq believed in the imamat of Imam Kadhim, Abdullah could still gather groups of Shias around himself. However, Abdullah passed away after a short period of around 70 days from the martyrdom of Imam Sadiq. He did not have any son to claim the imamat after him. This caused the majority of his followers to return to Imam Kadhim and accept his imamat. By Imam Sadiq's martyrdom, the Islamic University, which was established in Medina by Imam Baqir and was expanded to its prosperity by Imam Sadiq, gradually closed. This was due to extensive fear dominated in the society by Mansur. No one would dare to share his identity as a Shia or associate himself to Imam Sadiq or Imam Kadhim. However, during the imamat of Imam Kadhim for around 35 years, there were times when the people could refer to the imam and ask him questions. Depending on the political situation and the pressure of the government on the imam, the people would refer to the imam in various numbers to benefit from him. More than 3,000 of the Imam's narrations are currently collected and compiled in the book known as Musnad al-Imam Kadhim. Furthermore, a famous statement about the importance of wisdom is narrated from the Imam to his companion and Shia scholar Hisham ibn Hakam. Also, various supplications are narrated from the Imam, including the famous supplication of Jawshan Saghir, which is recommended for protection from the enemies and catastrophes. The Imam also trained many notable scholars. Today, 6 of Imam Qadhim's companions, along with 12 of Imam Bakr and Imam Sadiq's companions, are regarded as Ashab-i-Ijma, or companions of the consensus. These 18 companions are the most authenticated companions of the Shia Imams, whose narrations are regarded with the highest level of trust by the scholars in the seminaries. After Mansur, his son Muhammad assumed power. Muhammad was given the title of Mahdi by his father Mansur to draw more attention from the Muslims to the Abbasid government. This was due to a widely accepted narration from the Prophet, which promised the appearance of a Mahdi from his lineage whose name would be the same as the Prophet's name. He would appear as a savior in a world filled with injustice and oppression. Mansur had followed the footsteps of Abdullah ibn Hassan, who had given the title of Mahdi to his son, Muhammad al-Nafs al-Zakiyya. Mansur, whose original name was Abdullah, named his son Muhammad and called him with the title of Mahdi to exploit the Prophet's narration in his favor. Mahdi inherited a vast and stable government, which was the result of his father, Mansur's, brutal strategies. In one of his wills to Mahdi, Mansur mentioned that he has prepared the smooth transition of government to Mahdi by making the people classified in 3 groups: the poor and needy who need him for help, the fugitives who are constantly looking for a shelter to save their lives, and the prisoners who request their freedom. At the time of Mahdi, the Abbasids had some victories in expanding their territory in the current-day Turkey. At the beginning of Mahdi's government, he was lenient in treating the people and the Prophet's lineage. Mahdi was looking to gather legitimacy for his new government after years of tyranny and suppressive government by his father Mansur. He distributed a large amount of stored wealth in Bayt al-Mal among the people. He freed the prisoners and returned the properties that Mansur had forcefully confiscated from the people. He also returned the properties that Mansur had seized from Imam Sadiq to Imam Qadhim. Imam Qadhim knew that Mahdi's policy is solely to stabilize his government. Once, the Imam came to Mahdi while he was returning the unlawfully confiscated wealth to their owners. The Imam asked Mahdi, "Why don't you return the land of Fadak to us?" He asked the Imam to define the boundaries of Fadak. The Imam defined the limits of Fadak as the 4 corners of the Islamic world of that time. With this response, the Imam implied that the entire Islamic kingdom belongs to him and the Abbasid's government is illegitimate. Mahdi, who was shocked and nervous by the Imam's response, left his place. Once Mahdi came to Medina and met the Imam, he decided to test the Imam's knowledge. He asked a question from the Imam regarding consuming alcohol, which he himself would indulge in. He asked the Imam if there is any Quranic evidence for why intoxication is haram or prohibited, as Quran only orders for maintaining the distance from it. The Imam said that God prohibits the sin in the Quran.
قُلْ إِنَّمَا حَرَّمَ رَبِّيَ الْفَوَاحِشَ مَا ظَهَرَ مِنْهَا وَمَا بَطَنَ وَالْإِثْمَ وَالْبَغْيَ.
Say, my Lord, has only prohibited indecencies, those of them that are apparent as well as those that are concealed, and sin and rebellion without justice. The Imam continued that one of the sins that God has prohibited is intoxication, as is explicitly mentioned in the following verse of the Quran.
يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما
They ask you about the intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them, there is a great sin and means of profit for men, and their sin is greater than their profit. Mahdi, who was completely convinced by the Imam's logic, admitted that the Imam's answer is indeed originated from the prophetic source. With the passing of time, Mahdi became suspicious of Imam Qadhim, as more and more people were getting introduced to him as the Imam. Mahdi summoned the Imam from Medina to his palace in Baghdad and imprisoned him. After a short period, he decided to finish the Imam. However, Mahdi saw Imam Ali in his dream, who recited to him the following verse of the Quran.
فَهَلْ عَسَيْتُمْ إِن تَوَلَّيْتُمْ أَن تُفْسِدُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَتُقَطِّعُوا أَرْحَامَكُمْ.
May it not be that if you were to wield authority, you would cause corruption in the land and ill-treat your blood relations? Mahdi got scared from his dream, understood that the addressee of Imam Ali in his dream was Imam Qadhim, as he was from the children of Imam Ali and also had family relation with the Abbasids. Thus, Mahdi called Imam Qadhim from the prison and greeted him with respect. He then asked the Imam to pledge that he would not uprise against him nor any of his children. The Imam responded that he does not have any intention for an uprising, and this is not his tradition. Mahdi then released the Imam with respect, and the Imam returned to Medina. For the rest of Mahdi's government, there are no historical evidence of any action by Mahdi against the Imam. Multiple titles are attributed to Imam Qadhim that reflect his elevated character. He is known as Al-Qadhim, which means the one who harnesses his anger. This title has Quranic origin and is one of the characteristics of the pious people in the Quran as referred to the following verse.
وَجَنَّةٍ عَرْضُهَا السَّمَاوَاتُ وَالْأَرْضُ أُعِدَّتْ لِلْمُتَّقِينَ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ فِي السَّرَّاءِ وَالضَّرَّاءِ وَالْكَاظِمِينَ الْغَيْظَ وَالْعَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ وَاللَّهُ يُحِبُّ الْمُحْسِنِينَ.
Paradise is prepared for the pious, who spend their property for the cause of God, in prosperity as well as in adversity, and who also harness their anger and forgive the people. God loves the righteous ones. The Imam was given this title as he was patient against all difficult calamities that he endured during his lifetime. Whenever someone insulted, harassed, or talked ill about the Imam, he would not retaliate. Instead, he would treat him well and would send him a great reward to soften his heart about the Imam. The Imam's rewards in Medina was famous among the people, though his lifestyle was simple. Also, the Imam was imprisoned multiple times in various locations. Despite that, he did not curse his imprisoners and was patient with the calamities of his imprisonment. Imam Qadhim was known as Abd Saleh, or righteous servant of God, due to his long prayers and prostrations. The Imam was known among the Muslims for his long prayers and worships. During the suppressive government of the Abbasids, where no one dared to name the Imam in public, the Imam's Shia followers would use a cover name for the Imam, including Abd Saleh or Abu al-Hasan, to refer to him, his narrations, or advices. After Mahdi, his son Hadi, who was just around 25 years old, assumed power. He was very rude, harsh, heartless, and biased. He had kept himself busy with amusement and music parties, and would give huge wealth from the public Bayt al-Mal to the famous singers for his amusement. At this time, Hadi put substantial amount of pressure on the Prophet's lineage and the children of Imam Ali in Medina. He cut their allowances from Bayt al-Mal. He also chose someone from the descendants of the second caliph as the governor of Medina, who was known to be hostile to the Prophet's lineage. The governor forced them to show up at a governmental facility every night to confirm their presence in Medina. In the case of an absence of someone, he would summon the other ones of them and intimidate them for their lives and wealth. Had these harsh policies against the Prophet's lineage motivated them for an uprising against the Abbasids and their unjust government? The Prophet's lineage came around Husayn ibn Ali, who was one of their elders with great personality. Husayn ibn Ali was from the descendants of Imam Hassan and had witnessed long-standing oppressions from the Abbasids on the Prophet's lineage. Many of his relatives were already imprisoned or killed by Mansur's orders when he was young, such as his father, his maternal grandfather Abdullah ibn Hassan, and his uncle Muhammad al-Nafs al-Zakiyah. They encouraged him to initiate an uprising and he finally accepted. He initiated his uprising in Medina and conquered the city. He freed the prisoners and imprisoned Abbasid agents. He then moved his troops of about 300 soldiers to Mecca to use the upcoming Hajj season as an opportunity to recruit from the Muslims and expand his uprising. He eventually came to a battle with the Abbasid army of around 4,000 soldiers at a valley named Fakh outside Mecca and was defeated and martyred. Many of the Prophet's descendants who were in his troops were also martyred along with him. He was then named as the Martyr of Fakh after the place he was martyred at. This incident was the hardest incident for the Prophet's lineage after the tragedy of Karbala. Imam Qadhim had confirmed the uprising of Husayn, the martyr of Fakh. The Imam had informed him about his fate of martyrdom and his uprising. However, the Imam, who had witnessed his strong will for uprising, advised him to be strong and persistent in his chosen destiny and wished him a great reward from God. Also, when the Imam received news of martyrdom of Husayn, he cried and expressed his sorrow by saying that Husayn was a righteous believer and unique in his family. The Imam testified that Husayn was martyred while he was inviting the people to good and forbidding them from the evil. When the hostages and the heads of martyrs arrived at Hadi's palace in Baghdad, he ordered to behead the hostages and hang their bodies in the city. He also became angry and accused Imam Qadhim of providing hidden authority and guidance for this uprising. Hadi claimed that Husayn, the martyr of Fakh, followed Imam Qadhim's order for the uprising, as the Imam was the most well-known character in the Prophet's lineage. He then vowed firmly to kill and finish the Imam. Ali ibn Yaqtin was a loyal companion of the Imam, who held a high-ranking position in the Abbasid government. He sent a letter to the Imam informing him about Hadi's absolute decision to kill him. The Imam showed Ali's letter to his family and close companions, and they urged him to hide or escape from the persecution of Hadi. However, the Imam responded that he has sought refuge to God by reciting the Joshin Saghir supplication, and the Prophet had told him in his dream about Hadi's death. The Imam told him that the news of Hadi's death will arrive to Medina by the first coming messenger from Iraq, which exactly happened as the Imam predicted. Thus, Hadi passed away suddenly before being able to martyr the Imam, and after a short government of just 14 months. The Imam was aware of animosity against him among the Abbasid's family and government and the life threats that endangered him from them. To save himself from further persecution of the Abbasids, the Imam sent a letter to Khaysuran, the mother of Hadi, and expressed his condolences to her for the death of Hadi. She was one of the most influential characters in the Abbasid family. However, she had hostility with her son Hadi on his rulership and had preferred her younger son Harun for the caliphate. The Imam's action was effective to prohibit the Abbasids from taking any action against him. This was especially the case as Harun replaced his brother Hadi as the next Abbasid caliph, and Khizuran's decision-making influence in the Abbasids' government substantially increased. After the Battle of Fakh, the Prophet's descendants lost hope to resist against the Abbasids in Hijaz. Idris ibn Abdullah, the brother of Muhammad al-Nafs al-Zakiyya, was one of the survivors from the Battle of Fakh who escaped to the corner of the Abbasid government at northwestern Africa. With the aid from the local tribes, Idris could establish the autonomous Idrisid government at present-day Morocco and some parts of Algeria. Although the Idrisids became the first government established by the Prophet's descendants, there are no historical evidence approving their government by the Shia Imams. The Idrisid government lasted for around 2 centuries in that region. Idrisids, along with the government of the Umayyads remaining at Andalus in the current Spain, became 2 autonomous governments from the Abbasids in the western boundary of the Islamic territory. The long distance between the Abbasid capital al-Baghdad and the Idrisid territory limited their ability to defeat the Idrisid government by military operation. After Hadi, his brother Harun assumed power, who was just 25 years old. He portrayed himself as a religious person, while he was very heartless and cruel in his rulership. Harun inherited a large, stable, and rich government from northern Africa to India. He, like his brother Hadi, had kept himself busy with amusement and music parties and would give huge wealth from the public Baitul Mal to the famous singers for his amusement. For young Harun, his government was practically managed by his mother Khayzuran and his minister Yahya ibn Khalid Barmaki. In the beginning of Harun's government, he was lenient with the Imam. He himself knew that the Imam was in the heart of the people as the leader, and he was just a ruler overcoming them by sword and force. The Imam tried not to give Harun any excuse to harass or kill him, as he was the only source of guidance in the society. The Imam also did not initiate any uprising against Harun, as he had pledged to his father Mahdi in the years back to not uprise against Mahdi or any of his children. However, the Imam would not accept Harun as a righteous caliph and would stand against his conspiracies to deceive the people by portraying an Islamic outlook for himself and undermining the status of the Imam. Once Harun sent his messenger to call the Imam told his near ones that if it wasn't because of Harun's threats against his life, he would never visit him. In another occasion, Harun came to Medina and the Imam went to his presence. Harun respected the Imam and asked his sons to accompany the Imam on his way back. Later, one of his sons asked him about his out of ordinary respect to the Imam. Harun responded that the Imam has the heart of the people and I am just a ruler by sword and fear. Harun then said to his son that power does not recognize any family relationships. He continued to say to his son that even if it is you who stands against me and my government, I would eliminate you. When Harun left Medina, he sent gifts for the elders of Medina. However, the Imam's gift was negligible as compared to the others. When his son inquired him about this difference, Harun responded that I am afraid if I send him a large amount, he would prepare an army of around 100,000 soldiers from his family and followers to rise against me. The Abbasids, who were proud of being related to the Prophet, exploited and abused this relation to deceive the people and to legitimize their own government. However, this deception was not going to work for Imam Kadhim and the other descendants of the Prophet, as they were closer in relation to the Prophet than the Abbasids. There are multiple occasions when the Imam confronted Harun, and there were serious debates between them regarding their relationship to the Prophet. Once, Harun came to Medina and while standing by the Prophet's tomb, he saluted the Prophet by addressing him as his cousin. At this time, the Imam approached Harun from amongst the crowd and saluted the Prophet by addressing him as his father. Harun, who was embarrassed and ashamed in front of the crowd of people, did not have anything to add or claim. He then said to the Imam that your relationship to the Prophet is indeed a pride for you. On another occasion, Harun asked the Imam why he had claimed to have a closer blood relation to the Prophet than the Abbasids. In return, the Imam said to Harun that if the Prophet were to resurrect from his tomb and propose to your daughter, would you accept? Absolutely, Harun responded with excitement. Harun then continued to say that he would be proud among all the Muslims for such a marriage. The Imam then said that the Prophet would not propose to marry my daughter, as he would be her grandfather, and such a marriage is forbidden in Islam. Harun, who was shocked by the Imam's logical answer, admitted that the Imam is correct. Harun then asked the Imam why he had claimed to be from the Prophet's lineage, while the Prophet did not leave behind any sons. He said lineage applies for the children of a person from his sons, not from his daughters. Harun explicitly asked the Imam to convince him with Quranic evidence. The Imam asked Harun about the Prophet Jesus' father. Harun responded that the Prophet Jesus didn't have a father. The Imam then said that the Prophet Jesus has been named as an offspring of the Prophet Abraham and the other prophets in the Quran through his mother, Lady Mary, by referring to these verses of Quran.
وَوَهَبْنَا لَهُ إِسْحَاقَ وَيَعْقُوبَ كُلًّا هَدَيْنَا وَنُوحًا هَدَيْنَا مِنْ قَبْلُ وَمِنْ ذُرِّيَّتِهِ دَاوُدَ وَسُلَيْمَانَ وَأَيُّوبَ وَيُوسُفَ وَمُوسَى وَهَارُونَ وَكَذَلِكَ نَجْزِي الْمُحْسِنِينَ وَزَكَرِيَّا وَيَحْيَى وَعِيسَى وَإِلْيَاسَ.
And we gave Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and guided each of them. And from Abraham's offspring, David and Solomon, Job, Joseph, Moses, and Aaron, and Zechariah, John, Jesus, and Elias. The Imam then said, similar to the Prophet Jesus, we are the offspring of the Prophet and are related to him through our mother, Lady Fatima. The Imam then asked Harun if he was interested to hear more evidence from the Quran, and Harun approved. The Imam then referred to the verse of Mubahala in the Quran.
فَمَنْ حَاجَّكَ فِيهِ مِنْ بَعْدِ مَا جَاءَكَ مِنَ الْعِلْمِ فَقُلْ تَعَالَوْا نَدْعُ أَبْنَاءَنَا وَأَبْنَاءَكُمْ وَنِسَاءَنَا وَنِسَاءَكُمْ وَأَنفُسَنَا وَأَنفُسَكُمْ ثُمَّ نَبْتَهِلْ فَنَجْعَلْ لَعْنَةَ اللَّهِ عَلَى الْكَاذِبِينَ.
Tell those who dispute this with you even after the knowledge that has reached you. Come, let us gather our sons and your sons, our women and your women, ourselves and yourselves, and pray and solicit God to condemn those who lie. The Imam said that no single Muslim have ever claimed that the Prophet took anyone else with himself for Mubahila against the Christians other than Imam Ali, the Lady Fatima, Imam Hassan, and Imam Hussein. The Imam then said that according to the verse of Mubahila, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein are named as the sons of the Prophet. The Imam thus concluded that the children of Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein are indeed the Prophet's lineage. Harun, who was completely convinced by the Imam's Quranic reasonings, admitted that the Imam's answer was correct. One important event that occurred during the government of Harun was the discovery of the hidden tomb of Imam Ali in Najaf. The Shia Imams knew its hidden location and had kept it a secret. They had revealed it only to their close companions. This location was hidden from the public for about 130 years until the government of Harun. During this long period, the holy tomb of Imam Ali was saved from the revengeful actions of the Khawarij and the Umayyads, who had hatreds against Imam Ali's justice. For example, during the government of Hajjaj in Kufa, around 3,000 tombs were excavated by his order to find the tomb of Imam Ali in order to disrespect it. Finally, at the time of Harun, no serious threat was facing to the revealed tomb of Imam Ali. At this time, the Khawarij ideology was weakened, and their activities were limited to the boundaries of the Islamic territory at northern Iraq, Khorasan, and Sistan. Also, the Umayyads were overthrown by the Abbasids, who were proud of being related to the Prophet and Imam Ali. Thus, Harun ordered to construct a building on the tomb of Imam Ali. To meet the needs of the growing Shia community, Imam Sadiq had established a networking organization of his trusted companions as his representatives in various cities around the Islamic territory. Imam Qadhim took advantage of this organization effectively during his imamate. He began by proving himself as the next imam for the representatives who had traveled to Medina to transfer the Muslims' charity dues and asking their Islamic questions from him. At the time, the Abbasid spies were intensely monitoring the imam's activities, and there were serious life threats for him. The imam could not be the center for the communication with his Shia followers. The Abbasid rulers were particularly in great fear for allowing the transfer of the Muslims' charity dues to the imam in Medina, as they thought this could facilitate the imam's potential for an uprising against them. Thus, the imam expanded this organization as an effective method of leading the Shia community. The imam would guide his representatives on how to spend the Muslim charity dues and would respond to their questions by letter. The imam had also advised his representatives to avoid meeting him directly in Medina, but instead contact his chosen representative in Medina, Mufazzal ibn Umar. Overall, many aspects of this organization have not been recorded in history due to the hidden nature of this organization. At the time of Harun, there was an excessive pressure and surveillance on Imam Qadhim and his Shia followers by the government. The Imam had introduced the Abbasids as an oppressive government and had given strict advice to his followers to avoid any relationship with them. The Imam did not even allow simple business deals with the government. In one incident, the Imam confronted one of his companions who had rented his camels to Harun for traveling to Mecca to perform Hajj. The Imam told him, "By this rental, you will be waiting for Harun to return safely from his travel to pay you off for your rental wage and return your camel." The Imam then said that anyone who expects them to be alive or from them and their eternal place in hereafter is in hellfire along with them. By this strict advice, the Imam's companion sold all of his camels to avoid getting in business with the government. Despite the general order of the Imam to boycott any relationship with the oppressive Abbasid government, the Imam allowed for involvement in some sensitive positions in the government by his pious companions. This was one of the Imam's important strategies in leading the Shia community. The Imam's intentions for this exception was to save the wealth and lives of his Shia followers from persecution and oppression of the government. One of these pious companions of the Imam was Ali ibn Yaqtin. He became close to the government due to his father's loyalty and status to the Abbasid government. However, Ali ibn Yaqtin was different as compared to his father. He was a loyal companion of the Imam. With the Imam's approval, Ali ibn Yaqtin held a high-ranking position in the Abbasid's government, including Harun's government. Ali ibn Yaqtin wanted to resign from his position on multiple occasions. However, the Imam asked him to stay in his position, and he obeyed. The Imam had guaranteed him that he will not be killed with the sword of the enemy or be jailed, and he will not become poor. The Imam in return asked him to respect any of his Shia followers who came to him in the government. Ali ibn Yaqtin used his position to help the Shias and save their lives and wealth from the oppression of the Abbasids. For example, he would secretively return illegitimate taxes that the government was taking forcefully from the Shias. He would also send his Islamic obligatory dues to the Imam in Medina or spend it according to the Imam's guidance. For example, he was donating a large amount of money by sending a few hundreds of Shias to Hajj annually and would pay a large allowance for each of them. The Imam in return saved him on various occasions from the conspiracies and the plots of the Abbasids against him. The Imam would meet his representatives outside Medina, return his valuable gift back to him, or send him specific instruction on performing his religious ritual to save him from the Abbasids, who would become suspicious of him from time to time. After years of being in power, Harun began laying the groundwork to keep the Abbasid government in his own lineage. He selected his son Amin as his successor and his other son Mamun as Amin's successor. He was very concerned about the social popularity of the Imam and its consequences in his son's future government. Any minor excuse was enough to trigger him to take an action against the Imam. This excuse was given to him by his minister Yahya ibn Khalid bin Mahdi, who became jealous of Amin's selected private teacher. Yahya was afraid of losing influence in Amin's future government. This was especially the case since Yahya himself was the teacher of Harun in the past during his childhood and knew the importance of this position. Thus, he frequently talked ill about the selected teacher to Harun and labeled him as a Shia follower of Imam Qadhim. However, he failed to prove his accusation to Harun. Yahya's conspiracy instead caused Harun to investigate the Imam's whereabouts. Yahya made a plot with Muhammad ibn Ismail, the Imam's nephew, who was poor and prone to bad decisions. Yahya brought him from Medina to Baghdad before Harun. Muhammad ibn Ismail, who was bribed by Yahya, said to Harun that "I didn't think that the world has two caliphs, you in Baghdad and my uncle Musa ibn Ja'far in Medina." He said that the Muslims from all over the Islamic territory send their obligatory Islamic dues to the Imam in Medina. He accused the Imam for collecting a large wealth. Furthermore, he accused the Imam of establishing his own government by accusing him to print his name on the coins of his wealth. In this meeting, Harun promised Muhammad ibn Ismail with a significant reward. However, Muhammad ibn Ismail died by a sudden illness before receiving his reward. Yahya's conspiracy triggered Harun to take an action against the Imam. Harun, who wanted to get the Muslims' allegiance for the nomination of his son Amin as his successor, called the Muslims to Mecca for Hajj. On his way to Hajj, he stopped by Medina to arrest the Imam. He first decided to justify his action against the Imam in the eyes of Muslims. Thus, when he was visiting the tomb of the Holy Prophet, he addressed the Prophet and said loudly that, "I am sorry about my decision against Musa ibn Ja'far. I want to imprison him, as I am afraid that he would make a riot that perished the bloods of your nation." On the following day, Harun ordered for the Imam's arrest. The Imam was caught by Harun's soldiers in the Prophet's mosque while he was praying next to the Prophet's tomb. The soldiers broke the Imam's prayers and forcefully moved the Imam to outside of the mosque and brought him before Harun. Harun insulted and disrespected the Imam. He then ordered for preparation of two caravans towards Iraq, one towards Basra and the other to Kufa. His intention was to make the Imam's destination unknown and confront any attempt by the Imam's followers to release him. Furthermore, the long transfer time of the Imam from Medina to Basra, which took around 47 days, shows that the government feared from the attempts to release the Imam from captivity. They must have transferred the Imam from the local roads or have taken non-straight travel paths. The Imam was finally brought to Basra as a captive and was received by Harun's cousin and Basra's governor, Isa ibn Ja'far. Isa ibn Ja'far imprisoned the Imam in a cell inside his own house. The Imam was kept in this prison for around a year. The door of his cell would open twice in each day, once for delivering food and once to allow him to refresh his ablution. Isa ibn Ja'far was a corrupt character who would hold music and dance parties in his house. The Imam was harassed in this prison by the loud sounds of these parties. The Imam's activities and prayers were under intense surveillance by Isa ibn Ja'far's agents. One of these agents who had narrated that the Imam would repeatedly recite the following sentence in his prayers to God: "O my Lord, I used to ask you constantly to bless me with a quiet corner to pray, and now I am thankful of you for fulfilling my request." Harun frequently asked Isa ibn Ja'far to kill the Imam. However, he didn't accept Harun's order, as he didn't want to take the responsibility and the blame for killing the Imam. His friends also advised him to do the same. After a year, Isa ibn Ja'far sent a letter to Harun and complained to him about the lengthy imprisonment of the Imam in his house. He told Harun that he will not kill the Imam, and if Harun doesn't transfer the Imam, he would release him. He reminded Harun that he was closely watching the Imam and had witnessed him in constant prayer. He also told Harun that the Imam had never cursed nor said anything bad against anyone, including Harun in his prayers. When Harun received the letter of Isa ibn Ja'far, he sent a delegate to transfer the Imam to Baghdad. They transferred the Imam to one of Harun's loyal politicians, Fazl ibn Rabi, who was the son of Rabi, one of the most trustees of the Abbasid caliphs. Fazl ibn Rabi imprisoned the Imam in a cell in his house and secretly monitored all of his activities. Fazl ibn Rabi witnessed that the Imam fasted every day. He also witnessed that, except for a small part of the night, the Imam was in constant prayers and long prostrations. Harun would frequently go to the roof of the Imam's cell to spy on him in person. From the opening of the roof, he would only see a part of the Imam's dress on the ground. He would then ask where the Imam is in the cell. He would be responded that the dress is actually the Imam. He is in long prostrations, continuously from sunrise to noon. When Harun was asked, "If you know the Imam's conditions, why do you still keep him in the prison?" Harun responded that, "I don't have any other choice, and the Imam's imprisonment is better for my government." After a while, Fazl ibn Rabi became influenced by the Imam's character and prayers. He refused Harun's orders to finish the Imam. Harun, who was disappointed at Fazl ibn Rabi, ordered to transfer the Imam in Baghdad to the house of Fazl ibn Yahya. He was one of Harun's loyal politicians and the son of his famous minister, Yahya ibn Khalid Barmaki. The Imam's character and prayers had a great influence on the heart of his prison keepers. Although Yahya ibn Khalid Barmaki encouraged Harun to imprison the Imam, his son Fazl ibn Yahya, who was keeping the Imam in his custody, was influenced by the Imam's character. Fazl ibn Yahya witnessed the Imam in long prayers, prostration, and constant fasting. He then changed his treatment to the Imam and provided him with respect and comfort. When Harun received the news that the Imam is in comfort, he became angry and ordered to punish Fazl ibn Yahya by lashes. He also ordered the transfer of the Imam in Baghdad to one of his most heartless and obedient agents, Isandi ibn Shahak, who is the head of the police in Baghdad. Imprisonment of the Imam in the house of Sandi ibn Shahak was the hardest among his other imprisonments. Sandi ibn Shahak was a heartless army leader who would obey Harun's orders blindly. Despite the harsh treatment from Sandi ibn Shahak, the Imam's presence had influenced anyone who would meet him. Ironically, Sandi's own family members were among those who were influenced and guided by the Imam. In the years later, Sandi's grandson Kashajim became a great Shia poet and scholar who would publicly recite poetry in the eulogy of the Shia Imams. Mm-hmm. After a few years of imprisonment, Harun was determined to do anything to defame the Imam in the eyes of the Muslims. One of his plots was to attract the Imam towards himself to legitimize his government. He sent a messenger to the Imam in the prison. The Imam completely ignored the presence of the messenger and continued his long prayers. After a while, the messenger got worried that his long stay might make Harun suspicious and angry. He then began talking immediately between the Imam's prayers. He told the Imam that Harun had brought him to Iraq because of ill talks against him. However, as far as Harun had investigated, he found the Imam innocent and all the rumors against the Imam as lies. He said that Harun prefers to keep the Imam near him as this will give peace to his heart. He then said that Harun likes to provide the Imam with any food that the Imam desires. The Imam responded with just a concise sentence, "My wealth is not with me to benefit me, and I am not created to ask." The Imam then immediately started his next prayer. The Imam's reaction showed Harun that even after years of imprisonment, the Imam would not surrender to him. On another occasion, Harun forcefully sent a female slave into the Imam's cell. His ill intention was to have her as a witness to speak against the Imam's character in the public. However, she was influenced by the Imam's prayers and divine personality. After a while, Harun was informed that she is a different person. She was constantly in prostration and was asking forgiveness from God. When she was brought to Harun, he accused the Imam of doing magic to her. However, she confronted Harun and spoke positively about the Imam and testified in the Imam's divine character. Harun, who initially wanted to have her as a witness against the Imam, now had to ask someone from his close ones to hide her from the public. She was a pious servant of God until her very last breath. In another occasion, the Imam sent a letter to Harun from the prison. The Imam told Harun that every hard day that passes on him, the same day also passes from Harun's happy days until an upcoming day when both will meet in the hereafter. The Imam continued to say that on that day, the followers of falsehood will admit to their losses. The Imam's message showed Harun that the Imam will not beg for his freedom and will resist against all of the inflicted calamities until his martyrdom. After around 4 years of the Imam's imprisonment, Harun, who was completely hopeless to break the Imam's resistivity against his government, decided to kill the Imam. He left Baghdad to a faraway city of Raqqa in current Syria to show himself as innocent in the Imam's martyrdom. He sent his minister Yahya ibn Khalid Barmaki to Baghdad with a secret mission to poison the Imam. Yahya's motivation for this mission was to gain Harun's trust, as Harun was disappointed from Yahya's son Fazl ibn Yahya due to how he had honored the Imam during the Imam's imprisonment in his house. Yahya delivered Harun's order to Sendi ibn Shahak and gave him poisonous dates. Sendi served the poisonous dates to the Imam, which led to his martyrdom. Immediately after poisoning the Imam before his martyrdom, Sendi wanted to portray to the public that the Imam's martyrdom was a natural death. He moved the Imam to a comfortable setting with nice carpets. He then gathered a group of around 80 people from the scholars and the elders of Baghdad in his house. He made them face to face with the Imam and asked them to testify that the Imam was physically safe and unharmed. He told them that the people think we are hurting Musa ibn Ja'far, but as you see, he is healthy and in comfort, and we have only kept him here until Harun returns to Baghdad to speak and debate with him. However, the Imam unexpectedly began to talk and told them that he was just poisoned and would pass away in 3 days. By the Imam's words, Sendi became nervous and his plot failed. After 3 days from the Imam's poisoning, his soul ascended. He was martyred on the 25th of Rajab in the year 183 of Hijri in Baghdad at the age of 55. After the Imam's martyrdom, Sendi still wanted to complete his previously unsuccessful plot of portraying a natural death for the Imam's martyrdom for the people. He gathered more than 50 people in his house who all knew the Imam. He showed the Imam's body to them and asked them to testify that there is no sign of injury or suffocation on his body. Sendi then ordered just 4 of his soldiers to take the Imam's corpse in the streets of Baghdad to insult the Imam and his Shia followers. He asked his soldiers to announce loudly in the streets of Baghdad that anyone who wants to see the body of the vicious son of the vicious, come to us as we are carrying the body of the Imam of Rafidi. The Rafidi was an insulting title they would use for the Shias. They then placed the Imam's corpse on the bridge over the Tigris River for a part of day. The people would come to see the Imam's corpse and witness that his body does not have any sign of torture or injury. Harun's uncle, Suleiman ibn Abi Ja'far, one of the most influential members of the Abbasid royal family, was in his palace by the Tigris River when he heard the turmoil and the people's voices. He inquired and was informed about Sendi's action of insulting the Imam's corpse. He condemned Sendi's action and found it politically incorrect and dangerous for Harun's government. Though he did not believe in the Imamate of Imam Qadhim, he was afraid that Sendi's action could trigger Shias who were in large number in Baghdad and the other cities to uprise against the government. Thus, he sent his agents to take the Imam's corpse from Sendi's soldiers and even advised them to use enforcement if needed. He himself then came on barefoot for the burial of the Imam. He asked his agents to announce in the city that anyone who wants to look at the face of the Blessed, Son of the Blessed, come and look at the face of Musa ibn Ja'far. The crowds of Muslims then came for the Imam's burial in a large number and a respectful burial ceremony was performed for the Imam. The crowd carried the Imam's corpse towards one of the city's graveyards that belonged to the Quraysh tribe that the Imam, the Abbasids, and Banu Hashim were belonged to it and respectfully buried the Imam. While in Raqqa, Harun received the news about the Imam's martyrdom and burial. To pretend that he was innocent, he sent a letter to his uncle, Suleiman ibn Abi Ja'far, and praised his actions of burying the Imam respectfully. In his letter, Harun cursed Sendi ibn Shahak for his actions during the Imam's burial and said that Sendi has acted based on his own decision without any approval from him. The Imamate of Imam Qadhim coincides with one of the most difficult periods in the Islamic history. During this period, the Abbasid government was stable and most powerful at its highest peak. Mansur stabilized the Abbasid government by applying his iron fist policy and eliminating his opponents brutally. The Imamate of Imam Qadhim began at the time of Mansur, when the Imam could not even publicly declare his Imamate, as Mansur's spies were looking to find the next Imam after Imam Sadiq and behead him. The Imamate of Imam Qadhim continued to the government of Mahdi, who initiated his government by declaring a public amnesty. However, as time passed, Mahdi became suspicious of the Imam and brought him to Baghdad and imprisoned him. He decided to kill the Imam. However, his dream changed his mind and he released the Imam. When Hadi assumed power, he put an extensive amount of pressure on the Prophet's lineage in Medina. This pressure eventually led to the uprising of the Prophet's lineage under the leadership of Hussein, the martyr of Fakh. Hadi attributed this uprising to Imam Qadhim and vowed firmly to kill him. However, God saved the Imam by Hadi's sudden death. When Harun assumed power, he was lenient towards the Imam. However, later he imprisoned the Imam in various locations for around 4 years and ordered for the poisoning and martyrdom of the Imam. The Imam was martyred and buried in Baghdad, far from his family in Medina. During such an unprecedented oppressive regime dominated in the society by the Abbasid government, the Imam had a critical role to lead the Shia community, guide them in their religious beliefs, and save them from division. the Imam expanded the organization of his representatives as an effective method in communication between himself and his Shia followers who were spread in the Islamic territory. This hidden organization allowed the Imam to indirectly connect to his followers, guide them, answer their questions, and ultimately grow the Shia community as a primary sect among the other factions of Islam. Despite serious life threats, the Imam never accepted the Abbasids as a righteous and legitimate government. He introduced the Abbasids as a government of injustice to his Shia followers and asked them to distance themselves from them. However, in certain circumstances, the Imam allowed his pious companions to take sensitive governmental positions to save the wealth and life of his Shia followers from the persecutions of the Abbasids. The Imam strongly confronted the Abbasid propaganda, such as their claim of their relationship with the Prophet, to deceive the people and legitimize their government. The life of Imam Qadhim was full of oppression, calamities, imprisonments, and life threats which he endured from multiple Abbasid caliphs. The lack of historical records and information about the condition of the Imam during his imprisonment is another proof for his oppression. The Abbasids hid the Imam's condition in the prison to prohibit any reaction from the Muslims. During Imam's life, he manifested the true meaning of his title, Qadhim, which is to control his anger. The Imam remained patient to all of the calamities he was inflicted with by the government and the ignorant people. However, he was blessed by God with a special status known by the people of Iraq as Bab al-Hawaij ilallah, which means the door of fulfillment of requests from God. Even today, many Muslims, regardless of their factions, visit Imam Qadhim's holy shrine in Baghdad, and their request from God is fulfilled through the Imam.